You're listening to a podcast from 702.
We want to take a close look at a Human Rights Commission report that, and there's no other way of putting it, really flays the Cape Town's city's attempt to deal with homelessness, which started out as a good news story, one of those stories where inadvertently coming out of COVID-19, we can anew recognize and render visible people that are normally invisible or seen as a moral nuisance in our cities. The homeless fit into that category, which is why last week, you'll remember, we spent the whole hour talking about homelessness across the country with a bunch of experts, as well as people who live homeless speaking in their own voices. Along the way, we had spoken about Strandfontein, but it was just really a blip in the hour-long conversation. Today, we want to take a deeper look at what's happened at that relocation site. And some of the stories coming out of it is an absolute horrific tale of, on the face of it, basic dignity and other fundamental human rights that appear not, in fact, to be respected, entrenched, underscored, and simply not the kind of values through which one should make a difference in the lives of people who even are citizens that you know, basically shouldn't be treated as if they should be grateful for any kind of assistance. We should make sure that the values of the Constitution inform our social justice efforts, even when we are reaching out to try and make a difference to people who are in need. We had invited the city of Cape Town to be part of this conversation, and my producer can tell you that they kept sending us from one person to the next. I've got the correspondence right here in front of me. So from the get-go, I want to say that It's not through any fault of ours that the city of Cape Town isn't represented today. We started off, J.P. Smith, who's been on my show before, and reaching out to him and basically turned down the opportunity to discuss this report. And you can see this email here sent back to my producer, Marva. Can you kindly redirect your request to the Mako member community service and health? And yet J.P. has been seen in the visuals at the site many a times. So suddenly to become agnostic about what's happening there is really absolutely mind-blowing and not good form, J.P. Smith. And of course, we then reached out, nevertheless, from a process point of view, to Councillor Zahid Badrudian with absolutely no luck. And we were then sent to a media manager. And you can see how the ones who are the political principals want to be further and further away, as if the media managers are the ones who are most important in terms of the locus of power within the city. So absolutely bad form on the part of the city of Cape Town to not be inside this conversation. I want to start off by playing you the reports of the people that we are talking about, so that we don't condescend to them, we don't anthropologize them, but those voices speak for themselves. And there are many, many voices that have fortunately been recorded of vulnerable and homeless people at the Strandfontein relocation site. Here is one of them.
I'm just a little bit confused. Why did they take us from our safe space where we were in to come and stay here, and we have to come and sleep here on the floor? The first thing, I was asleep. The next thing, I saw we were forced out of our own space to come and sleep here on the floor.
Yep, and there you have someone who is not clear why they were taken there. Now, that to me is a first red flag. It's a red flag when the very people that you're trying to help have not been having their agency respected enough and their autonomy to have been in proper consultation and conversation about what is happening to them, because then you treat them as subjects rather than as citizens. Here is a second clip.
Some of the guys with the two listeners just say, come, let's go, you must come, but by force. We don't have time to take our clothes, anything. Look, I still have the same clothes, underwear is further, right?
Need no clothes, nothing.
Ma'am, come, let's come closer, let's come closer.
It's not the right, man, we're not, we are human beings, man. We don't have to be treated like this.
Yeah, taken by force, we shouldn't be treated like this. Absolutely shocking. I mean, that is like, sounds more like an operation, get rid of all sorts of nasty things and remove them because they are unsightly on the streets of Cape Town. I mean, that's kind of like the subtext that's involved there. Really, really, really unacceptable. Well, one of the folks that had been involved in compiling this work on behalf of and for the Human Rights Commission is Tariq Jenkins, who's chair of Exxaro Restorative Justice Forum at the Center of African Studies at the University of Cape Town. Tariq, good morning to you and welcome to the Eusebius McKaiser Show.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
Let's start with what the scope was of this investigation report. What had you been asked to observe?
As a response to the president's C-19 lockdown, the city of Cape Town embarked on the development of this particular encampment as part of the response to the situation. Over time, there were a number of concerns emanating from the site. We had noticed that there were a range of alleged violations against street-based people in terms of how they were collected and dropped off in Franciscan. And then in the site itself, there were a number of reports coming from that situation that prompted the South African Human Rights Commission to then invite a group of independent assessors who would come to the site and then report on that. And so I was one of the independent assessors of about five that submitted a combined report to the South African Human Rights Commission.
Now, obviously, if under real circumstances one try and deal with the challenges of COVID-19, including providing accommodation for the homeless, you will find glitches here or there. But what did you find? Were you surprised by what you found? And let's begin that narrative. Fundamentally, were the values of the Constitution, in particular dignity, were those the values that shone through in how the homeless had been settled, or what did you find?
Well, let's start off with the process of collection. I think that having monitored the collection of homeless and street-based people from Ward 57 area in Cape Town, which is Mobile Observatory, we found that people were either forcefully removed, put into the back of law enforcement trucks, CID vehicles, or SAPS vehicles, and then taken to the centrally located pickup points where buses would take them through to Stanton Cape. During this kind of sort of negotiation, a lot of street-based people who I had interviewed confirmed that they were threatened with arrest should they not take up the opportunity to go to Stanton Cape, and were threatened for 6 months of 6 months imprisonment to Polesmore prison. They were also hoodwinked into acquiescence, so to speak, by some of the social workers who basically gave them a whole list of promises, saying that when they get to the site, they would have three meals a day, access to a hot shower, a mattress, a tent, but most importantly, that they would be protected from C-19, that they would go, they would be tested, and that social distancing would be part of the experience there. So ostensibly, there was this utopian paradigm that was brought to some of the street-based people that, in a way, also cajoled or convinced them into climbing onto those buses. And of course, you know, we see a situation where upon arrival at the site, things were not anywhere close to what they imagined it would be. So I think there are a number of irregularities in as far as the interpretation of consent has been, even leading up to the site. For those who have said that they, you know, volunteered themselves or had consented to go to Stanton Cape, you know, when one analyzes the set of circumstances, you would find elements of coercion and threat and of course a narrative of a different kind that convinced or pressurized people into going to center text.
Tariq, I want to talk about that and play a clip that underscores exactly that point. Just one such voice that voices the experience of one of the persons that you are referring to.
We were forced here. They took our money from the streets and from our tents. They gave us and put us in bags. You know, we have food. We want food. And you have They brought you there.
Did they feed us? What time was it? I say, if I don't go into your bags, I'm spreading.
There's nothing.
There's nothing.
Yeah, you can hear the cacophony there of confusion on the part of people that are vulnerable. Two things strike me there, Tariq. I mean, you talk about the complexity of consent. The word choice of one of the homeless people there is far more blunt than even your language. And I know that you are speaking not only with restraint, but with the appropriate moral criticism of the city. But even so, you can hear at the beginning of that clip, the person saying they grabbed us. Now, on the face of it, being grabbed is not consent. That is force. There's no other way to describe that. That is not even an attempt at hoodwinking or cajoling.
That is completely correct. I think we have a range of narratives in and around how people were collected.
Mm.
And some of them absolutely do include this issue of forced removals. And I think when we look at the historical paradox, really, about the location of Standfontein. Standfontein is an area that is whose name is termed after a koi and sand precinct of a beach fountain, and this was an area that was inhabited by the first indigenous people of this country.
Mm.
Later on, of course, it was also an area that was subjected to forced removals, and so we almost see the removals of the descendants of the Khoi and San within the context of Cape Town. Bahi means mountain people.
Yeah.
And this was part of an act of civil disobedience in the early 1900s where descendants of the Khoi and San refused housing options by the British colonial authorities in fear of having, in fear that should they have accepted those housing possibilities, they would have experienced the kind of legislative restriction that did in fact occur.
Mm.
So there was absolutely no public consultation process that really happened with the residents of Standfontein. And to the point where the South African Human Rights Commission had also received complaints from residents who suddenly were in their midst having to deal with a situation which from the onset did not really speak to the social contract that we have as South Africans under the Constitution. And I think when we talk about the rationale and the reasoning that underpins the C19 lockdown is to prevent the transmission of COVID. And especially within the lockdown regulations, there are specific clauses that allocate a very particular call out to the street-based people of our country. And I think the approach and the attitude mentality of how this particular process has been engaged by the cities is something that that has to be scrutinized.
Absolutely,
on a number of levels
and
interrogated, especially from a restorative justice perspective, because of the violations that and deep psychological violations that also had taken place on the way to Standfontein. Before people have arrived, there were no social distancing practice in place. In terms of the transportation, there were no masks, there were no gloves that were being used. You know, we saw jam-packed vehicles of either CID law enforcement vehicles or SAPS vehicles dropping people at the collection point. So already within the early stages of the inception of what's supposed to be a rehabilitative plan of safety and security and health sensitivity, we saw a setting whereby people were being moved in a way that would in fact endanger themselves. Now, on the way to strand container, and when you get to strand container, I think a very important thing to observe is that you're not walking into a health site per se. You walk into a fenced perimeter, which is guarded by numerous vehicles of law enforcement around the wall, and you walk through a checkpoint. Your first experience is walking into a militarized barrack. It's definitely the design and the choice of architecture that governs this particular site seems to favor in incarceration setting and safety and security more than it would favor a health site. So just to give you a sense of the securitization of the site, you have a number of large tents. When we arrived for the first time, the occupancy in some of those tents were up to 600 people. As you arrive through the gate, you walk towards the tent, and around each tent is a fence. Guarding the actual fence itself is a private security company. Behind the private security company is a line of law enforcement, and then you have the wall or the fence itself, and then behind that, another line of law enforcement that's there to monitor the perimeter wire in order to catch any escapees, so to speak.
Tariq, are you
describing
a site in South Africa in 2020 that from a place of deep compassion want to clothe, literally and figuratively, vulnerable people with a deep sense of dignity when we are fighting the pandemic? Or are you accidentally reading a description from an historical site in areas that are war-torn when people who are deemed undesirable are swept into a particular location? Because to me, the visceral description you're giving fits the latter more than the former.
From my personal perspective, when I walk into that site, I see a dystopian construction of the worst reminder of a system that we as a country have tried our very best to move from. To have the so-called nuisance class swept into a camp like this, where within the context of the interviews that I've engaged with the occupants, have described it as a prison, have described it as a concentration camp, have used the slang. And I must say that upon arrival the first time, there was a great sense of shock and shame that I had felt, because one would have asked the question, how on earth did we even reach a point like this?
Absolutely.
That the sort of design of such an operation would actually be a legitimate interpretation of lockdown regulations.
Before we answer that question, which is really important, I want to again render visible the people that we are speaking about, precisely because we need to treat them as fellow citizens rather than as subjects.
At the moment, we are all 500 people in a tent, and it's scary, yeah, because I'm a mother of an 8-year-old child, and I come from Lavendale. So when I came here, you were made different kinds of promises, and yet none of them were really made, you see. But our organization, OASIS, the coordinator, Cliffy, and his team, Cliffy, Leon, Romano, Bevan, we are well taken care of. Because when we came here, they were told that we're going to have 2 meals a day. But them, out of their own pockets, they're providing us for 4 meals a day.
Absolutely. And that is speaking to the gap between utopian promise that Tariq's been talking about and the experience of people inside Strandfontein relocation site. There's a last clip I want to play, and then we'll wrap it after that with Tariq Jenkins, who has been one of the one of the folks who helped the South African Human Rights Commission compiling this independent investigation report.
I want to give this context. You've heard now that not a single person has been tested for coronavirus. You've heard them.
Yeah, that's absolutely, absolutely chilling, chilling audio to listen to, Tariq. Were people tested? Was there physical distancing? What about the reality of gender-based violence? People who do not know each other? What about the possibility of rape, dare I say it? What about other vulnerabilities, the identities of the LGBTI communities who are often also part of Cape Town's homeless people that due to what happens at home find themselves on the street? Were their collective and individual sets of human rights observed inside the camp?
And as far as testing is concerned, we still do not know how many people have been tested. We don't know what these statistics are. As a matter of fact, when the South African, when the delegation invited by the South African Human Rights Commission asked the manager of the medical tent on site, basically she responded by saying that she was instructed by the city not to give us any information around that. So from the word go, the South African Human Rights Commission has been restricted in as far as details to the actual medical process on site. What we have observed is, in fact, a complete violation of lockdown regulations in as far as 500 people plus in tents who were sleeping on top of one another. There was no social distancing. The tents do not appease even the minimum requirements for ventilation for the stop of the spread of tuberculosis. We do know that there were and have been a couple of cases of TB, which at one point also resulted in the site being closed while they were dealing with that. On numerous occasions, I myself have been conducting interviews in the tents when I've been tapped on the shoulder by a woman who basically, in a very calm voice, casually stated that, you know, she had got back her TB results that day and that she was positive and that she was quite concerned. I then asked why she wasn't in isolation, and she said, well, the medical tent had told her to come and fetch her bags. But because of the shock of the results, she had actually fallen asleep in the tent. Mm. And by the time that she had informed me about it, the medical tent, by the way, which operates from 9 o'clock till 4 p.m., there is no medical operating sort of facility after 4 p.m. At that stage, the medical tent had been closed. And so she, along with others, throughout this few-week period, would be sleeping in these large tents, having tuberculosis. And we've also seen C-19 candidates who have been tested who should be in isolation, sort of roaming in between the tents.
Yeah.
So the actual administration of the medical fundamentals seem not to be in place, and access to information around that has now reached new levels of restriction, where monitors from the South African Human Rights Commission have been told that they would have to apply via PIA. to the city.
But that's insane. No wonder they're running away from my show, because the city of Cape Town doesn't want to be held accountable. Absolutely shocking. And this is a city that prides itself on being the gold standard of governance and of openness and of being better than cities that are run particularly by the African National Congress and the rest of our country. So shame on the DA, shame on the city of Cape Town. I'm going to give you 1 minute. It's a complex story. We'll come back to it and we'll keep tabs on it. But just in 1 minute, Tariq, what is the main thing you want the Human Rights Commission to do with your observations? And what do you want to say to the city of Cape Town? They may be running for the hills, but they do listen to this program. If they are listening, what do you want to say to them? And also, what should the Human Rights Commission do with the report?
The report gives a well-documented testimony of the violations that have already been committed. We know that the city is doing what it can to not only change the dramaturgy of the narrative, but also to enact a number of changes on site. While the city is doing that, which it is its duty to do so, I think we must not forget the fact that a lot of the damage ostensibly has been done. I think from the report we can say that what has been created is an ostensible incubator for the transmission of airborne diseases, and in this case, COVID and tuberculosis, and that people have been in a particular kind of environment without the requisite relief for a duration of time that has in fact endangered it. And so as we ask for a phased closure, we do feel that everyone needs to be tested in that site, including law enforcement, including the staff and management there. We feel that the city should lift its sanction against the South African Human Rights Commission's requests in terms of access to specific details.
Absolutely.
Around its own management. And I think for all South Africans, to be aware and to be fully briefed on the situation.
Okay.
I think it is a situation which needs to be dealt with immediately.
Yeah.
A slow repatriation process of the sheep-based people is necessary, but it has to be done sensitively, carefully, in collaboration with the communities that they come from, including NGOs and civil society.
We're going to leave it there for today. Thanks for the work that you've done on this important human rights matter. It's nothing less and nothing more fundamental than a human rights issue. Tariq, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's Tariq Jenkins, the chair of the Exxara Restorative Justice Forum, based at the University of Cape Town.